Our prelude this morning is Climb Every Mountain by Rogers, performed by Amber. The lyrics are on the back of your order of service, so feel free to sing along, and please remain seated. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. Whether you're connecting via Zoom or here in person, we are one community today, united in love and purpose. My name is Johanna Hatch. I use she, her, hers pronouns. I've been a member of Prairie for over 10 years, and I am a member of the choir and the Committee on Ministry. Some of us are bringing our best selves to this space, and some of us are bringing our struggling selves. All of us are welcome here, and all of us are loved. All of us are imperfect, but we're here to drop our defenses and trust that what happens in this space is powerful and life-giving. Together, we affirm that this day and our being together can make each of us braver, more compassionate, and wiser than when we woke up this morning. We welcome you here. Let us move into the service, willing to be authentic with each other, honest within ourselves, and open to connection in all forms. Our chalice lighting is a combination of quotes from Maya Angelou, John Lewis, Leo Buscaglia, Nelson Mandela, and Chief Dan George, read today by Aurora.
It takes courage to be kind. It takes courage to spread kindness. In a world where everyone is suffering in different ways, including you, but kindness can be a light in the darkness. Kindness is not just an act. It is a way of life, a commitment to sharing your light with others. Too often, we underestimate the power of a touch, a smile, a kind word, a listening ear, an honest compliment, or even the smallest act of care, all of which have the potential to turn a life around. The smallest act of kindness is worth more than the greatest intention. When we care for one another, we create the world we wish to live.
Our opening music this morning is number one in the gray hymnal, May Nothing Evil Cross This Door, accompanied by Amber. Please rise in body or spirit.
Thank you.
Today's story for all ages is Should I Share My Ice Cream? By Mo Willems, read by our Director of Religious Exploration, Karen Deaton. Youth and adults are welcome to gather around up front and listen to the story.
I bet a lot of you know who this guy is. Who's that?
Elephant.
I'm going to read it to you. I'm going to read it this time. We'll take it downstairs, and then you can look at it some more. I'm sorry, I need to read it. Ah! This is Elephant, and who's Elephant's best friend? Piggy. Sit down so you can hear. Sit down so you can hear the story. This book. This book is called Should I Share My Ice Cream? Did you guys ever have something that you liked so much you just wanted to keep it all to yourself? It's hard to share sometimes. I love ice cream. Here's the penguin who's got the ice cream cart. And the penguin says, ice cream, get your cold ice cream for a hot day. And elephant says, oh boy, ice cream. One ice cream, please. And penguin says, here you go. What kind of ice cream do you think elephant has? It's green.
Mint.
Mint is a green ice cream. Oh, look at how excited elephant is. Oh boy, I love ice cream. That's the way I feel too. Wait. Piggy loves ice cream too. Piggy is my best friend. Should I share my ice cream with her? Should I share my awesome, yummy, sweet, super great, tasty, nice, cool ice cream? Maybe Piggy doesn't like this flavor. Sharing a flavor that Piggy does not like would be wrong. I will eat the ice cream. Wait. Piggy will like this flavor. It is very yummy. I will share my ice cream. It will not be easy. And what's happening to the ice cream? It's melting. It's starting to drip. It's melting to water, yeah. Hey. Piggy is not here. She does not know I have ice cream. I will eat the ice cream. Where is Piggy? What if she is sad somewhere? I must find her. And he's imagining taking the ice cream to Piggy. When I do, I will say, would you like some of my ice cream? And then she will say, thank you, that would cheer me up. Then I will give her my ice cream to share. And Piggy's saying, yum. Then my best friend will be happy. And Elephant imagines them sharing the ice cream together and looking so happy. I will do it. I will share my plop. Ice cream? No!
That's a loud no.
It's a very loud and long no, isn't it? Now Piggy cannot have any of my ice cream. And now I cannot have any of my ice cream. And he's just so sad. He says, I blew it. Who's coming?
Maya has chocolate ice cream.
She has chocolate ice cream.
I love chocolate ice cream.
Me too. And Piggy says, you look sad. Would you like some of my ice cream? And Elephant says, thank you. That would cheer me up. Yum.
And there they are, sitting happily together, eating the ice cream. And then Elephant realizes, that was not my plan. Oh, well. This works, too. The end.
Let us join our hearts and enter into meditation. I'll ring the chime again at the end of this time of silence. Our presentation this morning is More Than a Kidney, a Community of Care by Ari Lowe. Ari is a member of Prairie and actually just signed our membership book 2 weeks ago. Ari is a self-described animal lover. They teach day camps at the Henry Vilas Zoo, help train neighborhood dogs, and volunteer helping people clean and organize their homes. Ari is also serving on the City of Fitchburg Community Equity Committee and the Healthy Neighborhood Advisory Committee. Please join me in welcoming Ari.
Ari Lowe, they, them. Thanks, everyone, for being here. I have a compulsion to be helpful. For most people, helping brings joy. For me, it's more like scratching an itch. It brings relief, not pride. That might sound strange, but I know my brain works differently. And honestly, talking about how I'm different makes me a little uncomfortable. From a young age, I felt like an outsider. I longed to belong. Don't we all? Today, I want to share a story about one way I tried to scratch that itch to help. I hope my story sparks ideas for how you might help your community in ways that feel authentic to you. So, before I tell you about my donation itself, I want to start with where this all began. This feeling that I had to help. Not because I was noble, but because helping felt like something I couldn't not do. Along the way, I'll share how Along the way, I'll share how that drive shaped my decision to donate a kidney, the questions that people asked me, Like, why would you do that? And the thoughts I had to work through to understand my own motivations. I'll talk a bit about the medical process and what recovery looks like. And I'll leave you with some reflections on what it means to live authentically and to serve others in a way that doesn't drain you, but fills you up. What makes me most uncomfortable about sharing my kidney donation story is when people say, "You're a hero." I know they mean it kindly, but my logic-bound brain goes, that's not true. I'm compulsive, awkward, and kind. Human, but not a hero. A response like, wow, that's so cool, feels better. It acknowledges what I did without putting me on a pedestal. It makes me feel like I belong. People often ask me why I donated. Early on, this question annoyed me, because it made me feel even more like an outsider. But my therapist helped me reframe it as curiosity, a way for people to connect. That shift helped. Now I enjoy telling my story. So, whether you're curious or just stuck listening, let's begin. In fourth grade, our teacher asked us to calculate how many kidney donations it would take to clear the national transplant waitlist. The answer was 5,000. I thought, when I grow up, I'll be one of them. Other kids were just relieved that the math was over, but I went home excited to tell my family. They didn't understand why I wanted to donate. We couldn't see eye to eye, and I realized this was one more way I didn't fit in, so I stayed quiet about it. But that math problem stuck with me, because it wasn't just about the numbers. What made that 5,000 number possible was something called a donation chain. For those who aren't familiar, a donation chain starts with someone like me, a non-directed donor, meaning I didn't have a specific recipient in mind. My kidney went to someone who needed it, and usually that person has a loved one who wants to donate to them but isn't a good match. So instead, that loved one donates to someone else who is a good match. And then that other recipient often has a willing but incompatible donor who keeps the chain going. One act of giving can ripple out through 5 or 10 or even 18 people. That's how 5,000 donors can help 30,000 people. It's incredible. I had hoped to spark a chain like that when I donated. In the end, my chain was only one person long, just me and one recipient. And that's okay. Even one family helped is worth it to me. But the dream of starting a chain was part of what inspired me from the beginning. Throughout school, I was often bullied, sometimes for standing up for others. My compulsion to help and my courage often made me a target. I remember being the first one on the dance floor, even when others laughed from the sidelines. Dancing was too fun to sit it out. Later, when I came out as non-binary, I chose the name Ari, which means lion in Hebrew, a nod to courage. Donating a kidney took courage, but so does living authentically. That thread of wanting to help, of wanting to belong, ran through my life for a long time. But it wasn't until I began to truly listen to my own inner voice and to surround myself with people who supported me that I felt empowered to do something as big and life-changing as donating a kidney. So, why did I donate? Because I wanted a world where people help each other. Because I want others to feel they belong. Because dialysis is awful, and I want to spare someone and their family that pain. Because if I ever need a kidney, I hope someone will help me. Because I want to leave the world a better place than I found it. But donating a kidney wasn't the main way that I tried to accomplish these goals. It's just one of many ways I try to leave the world a better place than I found it. I'm just as passionate about picking up trash in my community, about helping people feel less overwhelmed by clutter, and about volunteering my time. The drive to help is the same. My donation journey started with self-confidence, and that journey began with my spouse, Simon. He's supportive, calm, and celebrates my energy. When I told him years ago I wanted to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, he said, "Then do it." Most people thought it was too much for me, but with Simon's support, I stayed focused, and that climb taught me to trust my inner voice. Later, I came out as pansexual and then non-binary. By the time I decided to donate, I trusted my inner voice enough to do what I knew was right for me. Now, deciding to donate is one thing. Actually going through with it is another. The process itself is intense, and I want to talk you through it briefly, not just so you know what was involved, but because every step taught me something about myself, about others, and about what it really means to give. I contacted the UW Transplant Clinic in December 2023. They responded in January 2024, and that's when I told Simon. Yeah. He was surprised. He'd never heard me mention kidney donation, but he rolled with it. Most of my family knew that they couldn't talk me out of it, and they just accepted my strange decision. Some were upset. Here's my advice. If someone in your life wants to donate an organ, it's okay to feel uncomfortable. If so, rather than expressing your discomfort in the moment, I think it's a better way would be to respond would be to say something like, "Wow, that's a big decision." If you're calm later, then at that time you can ask thoughtful questions to understand their motives. I had to complete a lot of paperwork, including questions about my mental health. People with suicidal ideations are sometimes drawn to organ donation, but research shows that for a week after one kidney is removed, your hormones are imbalanced and depressive episodes increase. So, you cannot donate your kidney without having your mental health well managed. Then came a slew of medical tests, blood work, a 24-hour urine collection, a family medical history, an assessment of kidney function. Fun fact, you can't donate if you have a 1% chance of developing diabetes. And although both of my grandpas had diabetes, my health and my kidney function put me at a 0.7% chance of developing diabetes in my life. Another fun fact, donors can be any age. UW has had people donate even in their 70s. Back to the timeline. In June, I met with the transplant team, a full day of appointments with a social worker, dietitian, nurse practitioner, anesthesiologist, surgeon, and transplant coordinator. Everyone tried to talk me out of it. It was exhausting to convince each medical professional in turn that I was determined to donate. Eventually, my case was reviewed by a medical panel, and in June, they approved me. Next came genetic testing so that the National Kidney Registry could match me with a recipient. In August, I was told I had a match. Woo! Surgery was scheduled for September. The kidney was, The kidney was removed, driven to Minnesota, and transplanted without removing the recipient's original kidneys. Post-op, I was in pain, but the care team was fantastic. I stayed an extra day in the hospital to recover quietly and in really capable hands. My dad surprised me with multiple visits, which meant so much to me. I slept a lot, took short walks, sometimes picking up trash in the hospital garden, which wasn't really what I was supposed to do. Recovery was slow. And I was winded really easily. Even after being cleared for light workouts, I was exhausted. For about 4 months, I had to put all the other activities in my life on hold. That forced pause in my life turned out to be a big blessing. I reevaluated my commitments. Which projects brought me joy? Which drained me? Was I doing any out of obligation? I let some of them go, I kept some others, and I chose new ones that aligned with my values. I also watched a lot of YouTube. Now, I'm back to being busy, but in a way that fills up my emotional cup instead of drains me. I bring my most authentic, fun-loving, non-binary, energetic self to all of those projects. Not feeling so drained, I feel like I'm able to be more emotionally available for the people I help and stay with them in their moments of struggle and their moments of achievement. It's such a wonderful feeling. Find what brings you joy, helps others, and gives you the emotional space to be your authentic self. We all play different roles in a community. Nope, wrong direction. We all play different roles in a community. Maybe your role is to donate a kidney. Maybe it's to support someone going through dialysis. Maybe it's to sit with people in their struggles and celebrations. I hope my story inspires you to spread kindness in your own way. One of the lessons that helped me the most in my journey of spreading kindness was something that I read while training to be a better foster parent. A woman in this excerpt describes how she used to spend so much energy judging others, how they dressed, how they spoke, how they worked. Then her trauma therapist challenged her to silently say, "I love you," in her head every time she met someone new for 28 days. Just assuming good intent. Assume people are doing their best. And it changed her. This excerpt changed me too. So I'll read it. Start with, "I love you." During the first few minutes of our interview at a friend's kitchen table, I noticed very faint tattoos on Whitney's arm. It turned out they were done in white ink. I have a white tattoo on my lower left forearm that says, "I love you," and I don't think anyone has ever noticed it without me having to point it out. I was struggling a little bit with patience and compassion. Again, I'm codependent. I grew up in an alcoholic home. How we survived as children was by exerting control whenever possible, as though if I could just organize my drinks in the right way, I'm going to be fine. As an adult, I found myself getting frustrated with people not doing things my way. "I don't like the way you're doing things. I don't like the way you're saying that. I don't like the way you're sitting. Just everything. Is he wearing flip-flops to work?" It was just a way to not focus on myself. And I think, ultimately, sometimes when we judge other people, it's just a way to not look at ourselves. A way to feel superior or sanctimonious or whatever. My trauma therapist said, every time you meet someone, just in your head say, "I love you," before you have a conversation with them. And that conversation is going to go a lot better. It's just an interesting little trick. For 28 days, when I met someone, whether it's the lady at the DMV who's making me wait 2 hours or someone else, I would just assume everybody is doing their best with what they have, which is really hard for a lot of us to accept. Now, I saw a lot of myself in this story. I realized that I was spending so much mental energy judging what other people could be doing to make my life better. What if, instead, I focused on what I could do to improve my life and make other people's hard lives a little easier? That shift changed me. It made me a better foster parent, a better partner, and years later, a better kidney donor. So, how will you spread kindness today? Will you hold open a door? Say good morning to a neighbor? Spend an extra 5 minutes sitting with your kiddo in creative play? Check in with your local school's PTO? Show yourself kindness by taking a bubble bath or by sitting outside drinking tea? Find your way to bring light into the world. Help others feel like they belong. Whatever you do today, choose kindness as your superpower. There we go. And outside, there will be some free stickers for your iPhone cover, for your water bottle, for your name tag to remind you to choose kindness as your superpower. Oh, wait. To remind you to choose kindness as your superpower or to work hard and be kind. All sorts of different stickers free to you to remind you. Thank you, everyone.
So thank you so much, Ari. And now is the time in our community dedicates to discussion around the focus of today's service, relying upon our covenant of good relations as a guide to ensure all voices are welcomed and relationships are valued. We have until 10:55 for discussion. As you approach the podium, please watch your step near the microphone cord, form a line on either side of the room, or raise your hand to receive a microphone. Introducing yourself with your name and pronouns is welcomed. For those on Zoom, please raise a virtual hand, unmute once called on, or you may type into the chat to have your comment read aloud.
I'm Donald, he, him, me. I can relate so much with her. I've always been like picked on because I've always been kind. It's just who I am. And it's something I believe in. And I encourage everybody to just be kind and live in love and not hate. Thank you.
Matt, he, him. All right, that was a great talk. Really enjoyed it. I've got two questions. The first, was that actually a picture of your kidney on those slides? That's awesome. The second question, and you know, feel free to decline if this feels too personal. When you're walking on the sidewalk and you see a worm that has stranded itself on the sidewalk, do you feel compelled to pick up the worm and return it to the grass? You do? Okay. Thank you.
I am Barbara Park, she, her. Yeah, one of my coworkers said her first impression of me was looking, was looking out a window at me picking up all the worms on the sidewalk. But I want to say that I'm very glad that Ari decided when they were going through the sifting and winnowing of activities that the choir was still in there. Also, one of the other grannies gave me an apron that said an apron is a cape on backwards.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Suzanne, she, her. And I just want to say the first time I met Ari was when they came to the mending day that we had last year in the annex, and some of us were mending clothes we were hoping to have lots of neighbors come. We didn't have that many, but anyway, Ari was there. It was the first time I met her, and I could tell she was a little bit shy about meeting a bunch of middle-aged to older women, just like out of the blue, and but I was really glad they were there. The second time I met them, we had a little kitten, and we'd had this kitten for over a year, and she was very almost feral, and we couldn't clip her nails. And so Chris said, oh, well, Ari would be glad to come over and do that. And Ari and Chris came over, and they tried to capture our kitty, and they were unsuccessful, but it was truly an act of kindness, and we appreciated it.
Hi, Mary Sue Roydebook, she, her, hers. Ari, thank you. As someone who sees themselves or tries to see themselves as doing good, you reminded me about something. About kindness, it's so important. And my takeaway is courage and the authentic to not decide if someone is worth it or worthy, but the courage to be kind. Thank you.
My name is Andy, he, him. So I was curious, you know, was there an event that caused you to, I mean, I don't know, maybe you always loved yourself, but was there something, if you didn't, was there something that, you know, just sort of put you over the edge and started to make you love yourself?
Well, as a teenager, I actually really struggled with depression and eating disorders and all sorts of non-self-loving thoughts. So I wouldn't say that there was one event. It was probably a decade of me trying to work on myself and finding the inner strength within myself. But one thing that really helped along my journey was my partner, Simon. And he, in my opinion, showed me the kind of unconditional love that I was really looking for. I know that everybody, you know, tries to give love in their own way. And the love that Simon gave me was the kind of love that I needed. And that was really helpful in order to teach me that I was lovable. I had done some of my own work before I met him. So it's not like I was, you know, coming into the relationship as, you know, someone who is still really, really struggling. But that definitely, his love definitely helped. And we really respect each other and just kind of build each other up in a really wonderful way. So I think if you can find a friendship like that, if you can find someone who gives you the kind of love and validation that you need, I think that was what really helped me on my journey. But also just my inner strength, because I went through a lot of stuff, and I know that not everyone probably would have made it out, but I did. And I had a really nice family, you know, I mean, they were trying, so.
Arne Schroeder, she, her. Coincidentally, I had a visitor at the store yesterday who is the head of programming for public television. And I said, you know, how are you doing, John? He said, well, you may not know this, but I had a kidney transplant 10 months ago. And he was in with his wife shopping. And I said, well, that's huge. He said, yeah, I'm doing really well. He said, I waited 10 months for a donor. And so thank you, because if it wasn't for people who were willing to donate, and a lot of people, of course, don't know that you have two kidneys and that you don't need them both, but most of us like to keep our original parts just in case. So it's a huge thing that you did that. So thank you.
Hi, Josh, he, him. I got a couple things. First, the kidney donation is something close to me, because I had an aunt that donated a kidney to a friend, and then another friend from college that donated a kidney, and then another buddy that was donating to a friend, but then they passed before they were able to do the donation. So it's been, yeah, something close to me and my relations that I've had. And then also, I kind of another thing that you were talking about, like kind of being who you are, and then you were kind of isolated, or, you know, kind of trying to find your place and stuff like that. Well, I had the exact opposite thing, where it's like, I'm a white Midwestern guy. It's like easy to fit in with a lot of things, but I was still trying to figure it out, you know, as everybody does. And then it's just like, but through that, it's also kind of helped me realize, like, I was, you know, lucky enough to have a lot of love and stuff like that, a lot of support, and then come to the realization, it's like, well, not everybody has that, and I should be able to try to figure out how I can take what I was given and give it to other people in any way that I can. So that's something that, yeah, something that really struck with me. So thank you.
Hi, I'm Marnie Schulenberg, she, her. My best friend in Madison died in 2009 of breast cancer before her husband did, and they always had a running assumption that he would go first, because in his mid-20s, before they got married, he was diagnosed with kidney disease, and for as soon as home dialysis could be arranged, she was his home dialysis nurse. So with trepidation and shaking hands, she handled fistulas and insertion of this and that. And I served for a little while on the Wisconsin Kidney Board at her request. I could do you know, Edie was overwhelming. You always did what she wanted, and you had fun doing it. It was such a close-knit community. The people who stay at home and give each other for dialysis know everybody else who's in that circumstance, and they were really wonderful people. I have a question. Your talk was wonderful. If you are giving to a relative, do they give you such an exhaustive series of tests, especially the surprising one to me, trying to talk you out of it? That's terribly ethical, but whoa. So you're nodding. Should I just, all right. Yes, they do.
Okay. Yeah, my understanding is that it's the same process, whether you're a directed donor, meaning you know who you're directing your donation to, or a non-directed donor. And my understanding is them trying to talk you out of it is a pretty universal experience. So, although I've only really talked to people who have donated through UW Hospital, so I guess I don't know about, like, other experiences. But yeah, that team, they want people who are certain. And I was certain.
Can we have... Okay, go ahead.
Hello, I'm Donald Heham. I have another question for you. What would be the process when somebody dies? I mean, is there like a vigorous process for kidney donations, or how does that work? Or does it just go in?
So to clarify, is the question about donation from a deceased body?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah, gotcha. So that is actually right now the majority of kidney donations, because there are not enough living donors, people who are alive who are willing to donate their second kidney. The majority of kidney donations are, someone died from perhaps a heart attack or some other non-kidney related disease, and their kidneys are available for donation. And that, yeah, so that's the majority. Was there a different part of the question that I didn't answer, though?
Person dies, yeah. If there's still that vigorous screening that you have to, that the kidney has to go through?
Everything is on a much shorter timeline. You need to get that kidney out of the body and into another body as quickly as possible. And this was actually something that came up when I was asking about, like, how far can my kidney go? So, The kidney can only be outside of the body for an absolute maximum of 24 hours. And while it's out of the body, they have it hooked up to essentially like life support, so that it continues to get blood pumped through it. So in other words, to answer your question, everything is on a very compressed timeline. If you have I think it's on your driver's license, there's an option to donate a organ. And if you have checked that, they essentially say, great, we have your permission to donate your organ. Okay. Yeah.
I have another question.
Yeah.
I know if I want to donate blood, because at one time I was on Prozac, I could never donate. Would that also affect the kidney or other transplants?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a completely different eligibility process between blood donation and kidney donation. So I actually had that same question, because I was ineligible to donate blood for absolutely ridiculous reasons for quite a while. And then they changed the eligibility criteria. So now I'm allowed to donate blood. But anyway, even if you're not allowed to donate blood for whatever reason, you probably, like it's a completely different list of criteria for kidney donation. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Kent Wenger, he, him. Yeah, thanks for the talk. Really interesting. Several things. I've been in the boat of watching lots of YouTube recently as I recovered from surgeries. And also my sister only has one kidney. She was, you know, I don't know what the percentage is, but some percentage of people are born with only one. And she just found out about it accidentally because they were doing imaging for something totally unrelated. And then they were like, oh, by the way, you only have one kidney. which was kind of like one time I had imaging for my hip and they were like, by the way, that we see some stuff in your colon that we don't really like the look of. And it turned out to be nothing, but it was like two weeks or something of freaking out about do I have colon cancer or Crohn's disease or whatever. But I guess the thing I kind of find most interesting is the sort of psychological side in terms of not fitting in your own journey, because I guess I would just say that, being a straight, white, Midwestern, cisgender male does not guarantee that you feel like you fit in. And I don't want to tell the whole story, but one of my early memories when I was 6 years old was having this conversation where I sort of realized during the course of the conversation that I must sort of think a completely different way than everybody else. I mean, not, you know, probably not everybody else, but sort of the norm. And that's sort of been an ongoing theme for me, so.
Hi, I'm Adele, she, her. This is actually my first visit here, so I absolutely picked the perfect weekend to come and meet all of you. I want to thank Ari. I am a first-year seminary student to become a UU minister. And as I take on these studies, I'm kind of journaling or making a note of how I'm meeting people or seeing actions that portray our principles and our new common values, the six new common values. And so I thank you for giving me this journaling of kindness.
I'm going to jump up with one more question. How do you feel, what do you think about the idea of paying donors to donate kidneys?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Okay, so the question was about paying, like receiving money in exchange for donating your kidney. I know that there are a lot of financial reasons that people would not donate a kidney. So I see the benefit to providing people with a kind of like, I mean, I wasn't able to work for a while, right? So compensation for wages, I get that. And actually the National Kidney I don't know the organization's name. That organization does have a program that if I were, for example, someone with a 9-to-5 job, which I'm not, and I could have proved like this is the exact amount of wages that I am missing, then they will compensate you that amount. I was not in that boat, but so that exists. Paying for the kidney itself, I think, is a really dangerous slope. I would not be in favor of that kind of program personally. I see a lot of problems with paying people for their blood donations. That's already a program that exists in, for example, a lot of low-income cities in the South, and it is an awful program. I mean, it has so many unintended side effects that are just devastating to communities. I think that I think those are my thoughts. Yeah. Thanks for that question.
I'm Rick, and I've got a couple of things. First, Don back here, it's his birthday. He's been speaking a couple of times, but he's 56 today. Yeah. I told him I would announce it for him, so. I have good friends out in Grant County where I was on a farm for 10 years, whose daughter was born with some kidney problems, and eventually she needed a donor. And her whole family tested for it. One person tested the positive. That person was 16 years old. And even at that time, I thought, boy, that's an awful lot of pressure on somebody to donate their kidney as a child. She did, and as far as I've heard, there's never been any second guessing of that. But, you know, if I'd been her parent, I think I would have waited and see if a kidney was available for a while. It just seemed, you know, too much pressure on a young person. The recipient didn't live a privileged life. No one in that family did, but, you know, it was a very loving life, and she was very well taken care of by her mother and father and her brothers and sisters. And then she went to college, and she was on her own for the first time. And from my perspective, and I would never say this to anyone in her family, I think that she failed herself by not being fastidious enough about her own care. And as a consequence, she lost the kidney and lost her life. And then I thought about this 16-year-old who's now, well, now she's 50-something, you know. But at the time, she might have been only 25. And then it was like, then her kidney's gone too, you know. And you know, I just had some difficulty about that. And as far as, I don't think you should pay for organs, but you should put it on your driver's license. It's not going to cost you anything when they take it. But I do think they should pay for blood, because there's a lot of problem of getting blood. And it's wonderful to think that people are good enough to give it, and I give it myself. But I do think that there wouldn't be this constant cry for blood. You know, a lot of blood in Wisconsin goes to other states, and I don't know. I just kind of think they should pay for it.
So thank you again to Ari for that amazing presentation. We are sharing our offering this quarter with the Catalyst Project, a mutually supportive community for single mothers and their children who have experienced homelessness. Our offertory is I Won't Back Down by Petty and Lynn, performed by Amber. Lyrics are on the back of your order of service, and you are invited to sing along. Please stay seated.
Thank you.
Our closing words are a combination of two quotes from Brené Brown's book, Daring Greatly, read by Paula.
Paula, she, her. Courage is contagious. Every time we choose courage, we make everyone around us a little braver and the world a little better. And true belonging, the deep human desire to be part of something larger than ourselves, requires that same courage. Fitting in and seeking approval are hollow substitutes for belonging, because true belonging only happens when we present our authentic, imperfect selves to the world, which takes that courage. Our ability to truly belong can never be greater than our willingness to courageously accept ourselves.
Our closing music is number 1021 in the Teal Hymnal, Lean on Me, accompanied by Amber. Please rise in body or spirit. We do have a few announcements. Today after the service, there is a visitor orientation. If you're interested in learning more about Prairie, please meet in the foyer by the welcoming table. Next Sunday's service is our poetry share. Bring your original poems or your favorite poems, and we'll share them starting with one per person, and if there's time, we'll go around again. We'll have our potluck after the service next week. Please mark your calendars and save the date for Prairie's annual fall retreat at Bethel Horizons from Friday evening, September 26th, through Sunday morning, September 28th, 2025. Registration details will be sent as we get closer to the date. If you haven't yet, please pay for your auction items by next Sunday, April 6th. You can pay online or bring a check to Prairie or mail one in. Thank you. There are more announcements in your order of service and the news of the week email. Oh, and I have one more announcement from Heidi.
No, you're fine. Thank you. Impromptu, Heidi Hughes, she, her, from the nominating committee. There was just a small mistake in our news of the week. We said that we needed a secretary treasurer and a nominating committee member, but we don't need that. We don't need the nominating committee member because Margaret Moses decided she was staying on the committee. So, woo! And, but however, we need an at-large board member and a secretary and a treasurer. And feeding on Ari's great talk of volunteering and finding yourself and feeling the love and knowing that this community needs your talent and your volunteering. Look, think about it. Talk to one of us, me, Margaret, Carlene, and Barbara. Thank you.
So at this time, we are stopping the recording.